Let's get started, please. Thank you all for being here. Welcome to another CBTD board meeting. We'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Gregory, I didn't get a chance to chat with you. Would you mind leading us in that again, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, let's, I was looking for any comments or issues on the agenda and the minutes from last meeting. If there's anything there, ask her about it. If not, I'll make a motion to approve those.
Opposed.
There we go. I'll say again, third or whatever.
Okay. Moved and seconded.
I move that we approve.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, our next meeting is July 28th. Excuse me. Do we have any questions or comments from the public? See anybody on the Zoom call?
Okay, great. Then
we'll move on. So Seth Tate with Olson and Hogan's here to visit with us a little bit about open meeting training. Seth, if you'll go ahead and get started.
All right, you betcha. Todd told me I had to be brief, and he didn't know a ton of lawyer does. Kind of ridiculous, but I will do what I can here on this. I know a lot of you have probably received this training multiple times, but as I show in here, I get my clicker working. Let's see if I can hand it in. There we go. All right. So I'm going to try to cover five areas of open and public meetings law really quickly with you in 10 minutes or 10, 15 minutes. And of course, the policy behind this is what Abraham Lincoln said here. We just let the public know the facts. We hope that the country would be in good hands. I know our legislature really feels that's important. So this entire body of law is based on a transparency public policy. All right, and we're doing this because every year you're required to receive a training on this, and this is a really easy way of doing it, so that's why you're hearing this every year over and over again. The legislature requires you to do that. So let's start out with the definition of a public meeting, which seems a good place to start. Of course, public meetings, the convening of the public body. And it's not just the convening. We got to have a quorum, and we got to have be there for the purpose of discussing the public's business or acting on it. So even if we're not taking a vote, if we're discussing the public's business, it's still a public meeting. However, these types of meetings are not public meetings. They do not fall under the statute that we're discussing today. So a chance meeting, social gatherings, you know, holiday, whatever, dinners, if people even do that before, anymore after COVID. These types of getting together do not count as a public meeting and are not required to be on the record. Of course, one thing I want to put on this too is discussions amongst board members. Public policy welcomes that, and especially a board this size, it's recognized in the law that there will be discussions amongst board members. That's not considered a public meeting until you get a quorum together, which would be quite a group for this body. I sit on a few boards that only have five people, and it doesn't take too many out on that one. But, so just keep in mind that emails back and forth, chance meetings, or even meetings discussing the business of CBTD amongst board members, but not as a quorum, those are not public meetings. This is kind of funny. This slide's been in here since 2017. We would have never thought that, what we just had last year. So I know CBTD's been through quite a change. I won't cover that too much. I'd be probably sick and tired of electronic meetings. But of course, open and public meetings law allows that, welcomes that, as long as there's policies and protocols put in place. All right, I want to discuss just briefly that there is a distinction between public meetings and public hearings. I think maybe the public misunderstands this more than most elected officials do and board members. Open and public meetings does not mean that the public has an opportunity to participate in the meeting vocally. Tell some people that and they get quite upset. But open and public hearings, or when a hearing is being held, that's the public's chance to talk. And the chair of a board always has the ability to ask the public not to speak and disturb the meeting when it's not a public hearing. So that's something that's really important. Public hearings are usually, you know, there's a time set aside for that, and they have their chance to do that. Public hearings are required for some of CVTD's business, and this is required by statute. Things like rate changes, resolutions on impact fees, and things like that would require a public hearing rather than just the public meeting. And so I think those are important distinctions to make right there. Let's talk briefly, and I'll pause for a minute just for if there's any questions on some of this, but we can talk about closed meetings real quick as well. The law allows you as a board to close the public portion of a meeting, but you have to have specific reasons to do so, and those reasons are outlined in statute. And if we can't meet one of those reasons, we can't close the meeting. Okay, so I've listed some of those reasons. If you're discussing the character, competence, or health of an individual, right? If we're talking about security personnel, things like that, where you wouldn't want the public to know about that. Collective bargaining issues. If you're discussing imminent or pending litigation. Those are reasons you can close the public meeting, discuss that in prep for obvious reasons. Investigative proceedings, et cetera. By the way, purchasing and acquisition of real estate or other assets can be discussed in private, because sometimes those discussions are sensitive, right? We don't want the public to be, or another buyer to come in and outbid you or something on a project like that. And so these are the sorts of things, the reasons you can close a public meeting, and you have to have a legal reason to do that. So typically, you really won't be doing that unless hopefully legal counsel's been checked with or the statute's been discussed. And procedurally, yes, go ahead.
Can't you do it for personnel issues?
Yes, that was the first one. Yeah.
The character, isn't it?
Character, competence, or health of an individual. That would be, so for employment issues, you're discussing sensitive issues. If you need to, you can close the meeting for that. There are some exceptions on that one, but by and large, you can close a meeting for that, yeah. By the way, the exception, real quick, is for filling vacancies for an appointed position on the board, for example. You can't close the meeting for some of those types of, and they're not really personnel issues. That would be more under Nicole's, you're in your court.
Yeah.
But public filling of vacancies would not be able to be in a closed meeting, if that makes any sense. Go ahead, Thomas.
As Seth said, when we think we have something that's on the agenda that we would want to close, we check with legal counsel and say, hey, is this something that we can? We think this is, but is it correct? And so we would make sure that we're correct in doing that.
Yeah, it is a sensitive issue, so it's a good thing to run by counsel before you put that on the agenda, a closed portion. And the mechanics of getting into the closed meeting are also quite strictly outlined in the statute. So you can't go into a closed meeting without first having an open and public meeting. So you have to start an open and public meeting, and then by motion move into a closed meeting session. So that's often, I think, confused in some of the cities and towns that I represent. We have to keep working on that one. But so there is a process you have to follow. 2/3 majority, the supermajority vote to go in. The reasons for that need to be on the agenda, so they're publicly announced, so that the public knows, hey, there's an upcoming closed portion of the meeting, and they know what it's about, and so you're being as transparent as you can without divulging the sensitive nature of the closed meeting. All right, so any questions on any of that initial stuff, the distinction between open meetings and not meetings, chance meetings? Okay, great. All right, we'll just move on then. Something that you're required by law to receive training on is the notice requirements, although I realize as board members, you don't directly handle that, and the staff here does a great job with that, but I need to tell you about how that works. So, of course, regularly scheduled meetings. Once a year, CVTD has to publish the schedule for the year, and that's required by statute, and then before every meeting, there's also notice that goes out. And that's the 24-hour notice you sometimes hear about. That notice includes the agenda items and the date, time, and place of the meeting, so the public can be involved if they want to be. I already covered that. You can, though, call emergency meetings. We actually saw this last year with some public bodies, which I don't think, I used to wonder if this part of the statute ever got used, but it did in 2020 for a lot of different reasons. And so some of the notice provisions are a little more lax when there's urgent circumstances. And we won't go through all of those in detail because the code's kind of thick in that regard. Definitely, that would be done through council, you know, as you're guided to how to do that, make sure you don't run afoul of the open public meetings law. Agendas themselves, there have been cases in Utah where public bodies haven't had specific enough agendas, and so the law does, and that's actually a recent amendment in the last 5 to 6 years, there needs to be specificity, reasonable is the term it uses, and of course you can't. So you generally cannot discuss a topic in a public meeting that's not on the agenda, with one exception. If a member of the public, maybe in a public hearing, raises a topic, then you can discuss it even if it wasn't on the agenda, as long as someone in the public raised it for the first time. But you cannot vote on that issue. So if it's raised by the public and we discuss it, it's not on the agenda, we can't vote on something that was raised, you know, out of the blue. We'd have to put that on the next meeting agenda and we could vote on it then. And the reasons for that are pretty obvious. We want to make sure that the public's not blindsided by things being discussed that weren't public, that weren't noticed up in the notice, okay? So that's really important. Any questions on the agendas or the notice provisions? Okay. Let's talk about minutes then. Of course, part of the public meeting and openness policy of our statute is that we also keep records of what took place so that the public can go back and look retroactively to see what happened. So this involves minutes and audio recordings of each meeting. So at the beginning of your meetings, when you guys approve minutes of prior meetings, that's really actually an important part of the board's role, because you're basically saying, we are affirming that this written record that's now going to be in the public record forever, well, not forever, but for a very long time, that it's true and correct, and that we don't see any discrepancies there, and the public can rely on that. Those records are, I don't have a slide on that, but they are generally posted so the public can access them. Minutes are the same way, and the law requires those to be accessible by the public so they can come and read up and decipher what happened at a board meeting. So that's really important for transparency. Any questions on the agendas or the minutes or the audio recordings? By the way, and I don't know if I have a slide on this. My thing's not working again. But closed meeting minutes, you're not required to have minutes in closed meetings, but you are required to record them with a few exceptions. But they are not subject to a grammar request. So when you that's the end of, okay. So when you do go into a closed meeting, just keep in mind, there still is generally an audio recording of that, so although you're more open to talk about things, you probably still be cautious about what you're saying, and because they are, although they're generally not disclosable in a grammar request, there are some state agencies that can still get those. So with those agencies that have auditing authority, like the State Auditor's Office, for example, they have statutory authority to look at closed meeting minutes and audio recordings, so just be aware of that. But the public cannot generally. So that's sort of the balance the state has struck there. So anyway, any questions on any of that information? Any questions on anything else? All right. Did I do good, Todd? That's 12 minutes.
You're a rock star.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks to Todd, Therese, and the rest of the staff for keeping us in line on meetings and records. Appreciate it. So, Nicola, it's your turn to discuss compensation issues.
All right. Awesome. Okay, so over the past few months, we have been talking to you guys about our staffing difficulties. The staffing difficulties actually resulted in us reducing the frequency of service last month. That decision that we made was a difficult one. It wasn't taken lightly either. But over the past several months, what we've been doing is trying to gather information and collect data to determine what changed in the labor market. So in bringing this information to you, you remember seeing all of these stories that were out in the news, the public information that we had. But our objective to this was to demonstrate for you what our current staffing levels are like and what we need to do in order to get back to full service. So our most important goal is to provide consistent, safe, and reliable services. We have made some progress in staffing. However, as you can see by these numbers, we still need approximately 12 part-time drivers, 6 full-time drivers, and a full-time mechanic in order to get back to our full-time staff and to get back to full service. So for information purposes, I wanted to show you what our driver turnover has looked like. Over the last 5 years, the trend is basically flat. If we pull that out to another 10 years, it looks similar. When you compare us to industry standard, we typically fall in the below average category for turnover. And you probably remember Todd talking about that in some of those news stories that came out, that it wasn't necessarily the turnover that was the problem, but rather it was the applications that we were receiving or the lack of, really, to replace those. So these are our application numbers. I put these up to compare the same time from the last couple of years. We started seeing these indicators in January, but in February, you can see we had a 70% reduction in the amount of applications that we were receiving. That trend kind of continued through last month. You can also see by these numbers here that unfortunately we had more candidates that either withdrew from consideration or just plain rejected our offer of employment than what we were able to hire since January. This has actually been quite difficult for us. And I actually have been inquiring, and those candidates that were willing to discuss this with me about why they either withdrew or rejected our offer cited wages as the reason. We actually had several employees who made it all the way through the onboarding process and then would call a day before they were supposed to start and say that they'd taken another job for higher wages somewhere else. So the wages in the Valley are starting to change, and we've noticed this. Many of you have probably heard stories. You've probably gone into a restaurant and seen the signs. People are having to change their operating hours, closing their dining rooms, those kinds of things, because they don't get enough staff to complete the jobs that they need to have done. And like us, the other employers in the Valley are trying to find ways to entice employees to change employers. So what they're doing is they are increasing their wages rapidly. I've broken down a couple of lists. This particular list right here is for starting wages for what is called an unskilled entry-level worker. An unskilled worker is typically between the ages of 16 and 20. They have little to no job experience and lack even a high school diploma because it's not required in order to complete these jobs. Now, these starting wages are for skilled workers. A skilled worker is typically someone who has a special skill that requires a special training or knowledge, and it typically requires a licensing or a certification. Also, continuing education to keep those certifications or their licenses. This is where our workers fall, is in this category here. Now, the change to these types of wages, what it's done for us is it has pulled us away from our middle of the market policy that we have and has put us to lagging the market for the skilled worker. So typically what we do is we talk about these kinds of things when we're talking about next year's budget. So we bring this to you about that time. But we need to consider making a mid-year wage adjustment in order to realign our wage structure. We need to attract and retain staff to get back to full service. Our goal is to get back to full service by fall semester or the end of August so that we can accommodate the students coming back. So our proposed solution, after analysis of the collected data that we had, and in order for us to meet those staffing goals that we need, we are asking for a total wage adjustment pool of $300,000 to get us through the end of the year. What this will do is allow us to increase the starting wage to $18 per hour and adjust the current wages accordingly. Now, the largest wage adjustment is going to be for that driver pool that we have, taking them from $15 an hour to $18 per hour. And yes, that is a 20% adjustment. But it's apparent that the wages in the valley have moved, and we need to consider getting back into alignment with where we need to be. Our training process for new drivers can take up to 6 weeks. If we were allowed to do this and make this adjustment, we are confident, I have every expectation that we can fill a majority of those open positions if we could advertise for this quickly. If we could get them in and make this adjustment, we can get them in and get them trained and ready to go by the end of August. So I hope there's questions about the information I've presented. Yeah?
Are you comfortable that by making the starting wage change, as well as the ripple effect with existing employees, so that there isn't compression between a new employee and one that's been here 5 years?
Yes.
Is that enough?
Well, I think that the way we have done this concurrent wage adjustment, we do our market research every year. We would keep everyone within their market that they need to be within. We currently have people structured so that we don't have that wage compression, and I think we could maintain that structure.
So if you start at 18, what's the two-year employee? What are they going to make?
We currently do a 50-cent increase at your annual anniversary, but that 50-cent increase is based on your safety record and also your discipline record. So it's up to 50 cents.
So would if you move to 18, will everybody up the seniority move that same 15, 16, 17?
20%?
Yes.
So
well, the 20% wouldn't calculate through for someone saying that's currently making 18. Just the math from 15 to 18 equals to be 20%.
But
that's
how would you adjust someone who's currently making 18?
Well, we would do a concurrent wage adjustment for that driver pool. So $3 per hour up to, we cap our driver's wage range. We have a $5 spread, and we would keep that $5 spread for the driver.
Okay.
So our senior drivers currently make $20 per hour, and that would move them to 23.
So you're anticipating giving everyone a $3 an hour raise?
The driver pool, yes.
Part-time and full-time?
Correct. Part-time and full-time.
How much do you pay while they're training?
We start them at this is their training wage. Yes, we used to have a training wage that was very short, or it was quite significantly less than what the hourly wage was, but that became a problem to get people in. Because people had, they could go start another job making the $10 an hour, $12 an hour, whatever that was at that time, instead of making like $9 or $8.50,
yeah.
Which I think what the training wage used to be. Yeah.
I have sorry to interrupt. Do you know the cost of training a new driver, this six-week training program?
Yes, it costs us just about $2,700 to get a new driver in and trained. And currently, right now, what's happening is with the pools that we are selecting from, the candidate pool that we're selecting from, it's been difficult to get them through training. So we're having to spend a lot of extra time with them. We're having to spend a lot of extra resources to get those people through the training to make sure that they are safe and reliable and appropriate to be out there driving a bus. So it's changed kind of the, what we're seeing right now is it's just changing the type of applicant that we're getting.
So do you anticipate spending less on training if you raise the wage potentially?
That is definitely something that we could look at. I don't know how we could reduce the training costs because of the amount of hours and the resources that we have to put in to training. So I'll just give you a general hour breakdown. We spend just about 20 to 25 hours in the classroom teaching them policies, procedures, safety fundamentals, regulations, radio codes, all of the things that they need to know. Then we move them into a closed course portion of training where we teach them how to drive the bus, get them familiar with what it means to be behind that large of a vehicle. Then they have to have their CDL permit at that point, which is a written test that they have to take. Once they get that permit, then we move into what we call behind the wheel training. So that is the new driver one-on-one with the trainer. They are out on the road and they do at least 30 hours of training. That's the minimum. What we're seeing is that with some of the people that we're currently hiring and training, that we're getting closer to that 40-hour mark before we're comfortable with letting them even test for their CDL license. Then they have to test for their CDL license. They have to go through a final evaluation. Then we move them into what we call the cadetting stage. Still trainer on board with you, but you're in service picking up passengers, and we have that trainer to help them get through that, and that is about 16 to 20 hours. That is for route knowledge, that's for safety, that's for passenger, that's for customer service training, that's for all those things, those extra things that the drivers have to do. Plus they have to learn the paperwork and making sure that they're counting and doing all of those things that they're supposed to be doing for our regulations. So it's an arduous process to get them through training, and that's why it can take that long. So.
And the $2,700 is hour cost, or?
It can be man hour cost, it can be some of the resources that we use for training. They have training workbooks, we have a pass system.
But it doesn't include their wages?
That does not include their wages, no.
Okay, thank you.
No.
Would we be able to get back to the $2,700 cost by hiring someone who would be more qualified at this point by offering them an $18 wage versus a $14 or $15 wage?
Unfortunately, this is the problem with hiring experienced drivers, right? So by the time you find someone that's already got a CDL license and experience to go, they can go make significantly more. The school district's going to be moving to $20 an hour as their starting wage beginning next year. So, and we, this is the starting wage of someone who is untrained.
If only we could make a case that CBT passengers are better than screening children. What methodology do you use to gather the data on this?
So actually, this is a lot of just resource that I've been spending a lot of time online. So this is Indeed job searches. This is job searches with utah.gov on Department of Workforce Services data. The Department of Workforce Services actually publishes wage data. And so a lot of this information is pulled from them. Some of it is just honestly going into some of these businesses and asking them what they pay for their starting wages. Yeah, so, Best Buy, Zurcher's, Juniper Takeout, while you're there, order a dinner. They have for hiring sign. Great. What do you pay? $15 an hour. So.
Do you think the 18 will be enough, or should it be 19, 20?
Well, I wonder about that. That's definitely been a conversation that we've had. I think competitively, to stay mid-market, I think the ranges of 18 would be appropriate.
Nicole?
Yeah.
Are you looking at all at benefits, benefit changes at all as a
I
way
have not
to
considered
the deal?
Benefit changes. We do that as part of our budget process, and so that will be a discussion that we will be having. Just for anecdotal purposes, I've been trying to sell the benefits. Sell the benefits in an interview. I'm really like, hey, I understand, because the question is there any movement on your starting wage? This is a consistent question that I get during an interview. And I really have been trying to sell the benefits. Now, with the part-times, that doesn't really work because they don't get those, but it's just not moving the needle.
I see.
Yeah, the benefit package is fantastic, and they love that, but the reality of it is that they can go anywhere else to make more money.
CVTD isn't part of the URS, are they?
No.
So somebody that retires from URS can go directly and work for CVTD.
Correct.
That's a big, big issue, because if somebody was to retire from the state, say the school buses, they can,
well, if you're looking for a job, we have one for you.
They can come right to. No, I'm not. But anyway, it's a good question, because we do have a lot of people retire that can't do anything for a year.
Yeah.
You give us free ice cream, maybe we'll come drive.
They can't come work for us, Paul.
Right?
What?
They can't come work for us.
Okay.
Sorry, you had a question?
Yeah. How do you think this will impact your other job pools you have? I'm thinking you already have a full-time mechanic position open. Are you going to look at it having to raise those eventually and janitorial?
So, the mechanics position has also been quite the struggle. Because the pool for a mechanic, especially an experienced mechanic, is very, very small here in the Valley. And what we have seen a lot of is what people are currently doing right now is they're job hopping. They are coming in and they're taking a sign-on bonus and they're working, they're meeting what they need, their criteria for that, and then they're going to the next one. And they're going to the next one. And like with Shriver's, that Shriver's will pay you whatever it is that you're currently making, and if you make it 90 days, they'll bump you another $1.50. So it's, it is competitive out there because we are all vying for the same pool of people. So, yeah.
I'm guessing that with the $18 and your pool's going to get a little bit larger, I think, in August, I think you're probably going to be in better shape than your
I really anticipate that by making a move like this, that it would entice people to consider us differently than what we're currently seeing.
Have you considered doing any advertising for incoming students that you might start some of that in school sort of training before they even get here?
Yes, I do. I actually post on a job board with Utah State called Handshake. The problem with some of that is our regulations are is that you have to be at least 21 years old to hold a CDL license in the state of Utah. And so I do post on those boards, but with that caveat, I don't get a whole lot of activity. I really try to sell on at Utah State with their work people that they have up there too, trying to connect students with jobs, is flexibility for students that will, we can work around their school schedule. We like the students to come and work for us. And we do have a large student population, but this is what contributes to our turnover rate.
Is that 21 years old unique to passenger endorsements? Because you can be 18 and drive interstate, which is just within the state of Utah.
For what it must be passenger endorsement. I don't know. I don't hold a CDL.
Right.
So I don't have
the actual. You can get a CDL at 18.
I think
transport.
You just drive in Utah.
Transport passengers. Yeah.
You got to be 21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you for answering that question.
This might be the time to finish training and have to get a CDL, right? Because they can start.
Correct. So typically how the process works is that we encourage them to come to the first day of class with their CDL permit. So go take that written test, go down to Brigham City, take the test. You can't take it here in Logan. You have to take it in Brigham City. So we encourage them to do that before they show up to class. Not everyone does because they're just not prepared to go take that test. So we do provide them with some information that helps them pass that test. And then they have to have at least 2 weeks waiting period, and then they have to have 25 hours of driving experience. That's where that BTW, behind the wheel training, falls.
Are they hired on contingency of passing a DOT physical?
Yes. Yes. They have to pass a background check, a DOT physical, and a drug screen, a DOT drug screen. Okay.
It sounds like we
need a motion.
Looking for a motion here, I think.
I move that we consider that we adopt a pay increase for the $3 as proposed by Nicole.
I second that.
Yeah.
Do we need that, or do we need the $300,000?
That's what we are asking for, is a $300,000.
Do we need to amend this year's budget?
No, a budget amendment is not necessary.
I just wanted to clarify what we were doing.
Based on our current projections, we don't anticipate that.
Well, change your motion to read with the $300,000 and the $3.
Yeah.
Seth left, right?
Yeah, we adopt a $300,000 increase to the budget so that we can.
Read right up there what it says.
I move that we increase, we do a wage adjustment pool of $300,000 to the end of 2021.
There we go.
That's it.
And I still second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just late.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. So now, Todd, if you'll help us with the discussion, consideration of additional funding for the bus stop on Highway 89.
Yeah, so not everyone was here last month, but we have in the budget $50,000 to put a bus stop just south of the business building on the 400 North on the highway there. And we've got that approved through UDOT. We went through that process. But in the time in which we got that approved to now, the bids have come in where we would need to put an additional $50,000 in to make that bus stop happen. So I brought this to the board last month. There was some good discussion about that. And the reason that we had planned for this bus stop was in anticipation of school coming back in session. We know this will be a highly used stop. However, as was raised last month, that's a significant increase in what we agreed to. And so I'm just here saying that we can still move forward this year if we want, but we would need to increase that amount by $50,000. We'd need board authorization to do that.
Does this include a shelter or?
It doesn't. This is just the roadway. The university is doing sidewalk and lighting, but the university is taking care of that portion. And the university is partnering with us on the actual bus stop portion. I do believe the university will put a shelter up eventually. That's not something that's part of this. And so, again, my goal is just bringing this to the board. As was raised last month, if the board said, let's wait for a year and see if prices go down, that's fine. But we do know that this, at some point, this is going to be a highly used stop. And so we're just really looking for direction. Do we want to wait a year? Do we want to move forward with it now?
So Todd, we got a lot of COVID money, right?
We did get some COVID
money. We got a lot of COVID money. Yeah. And I don't think that it's unreasonable for us to spend the extra 50. We have this done now. That will increase our ridership and increase our visibility, and I think that's not a bad use of some of that money.
Sure. One of the reasons why this stop is even being discussed is because of the loop, right? So prior to the loop being in place, we did not have a bus going this direction on the highway. So when we instituted the loop, then that's when this came into effect. And again, for those of you that have spent any time at the university, we service 7th North, and that's a highly used area. But as a recovering student up there, right, there was a time where I would have killed for a bus stop along that backside for those classes that are on that side of campus. And so again, we know that this will be a highly used stop. The timing of it is really what we're here to talk about.
But you're banking on maybe the price is going down, more than likely the way that the government is spending, prices won't go down.
Will it be used by the university or just by us?
Both.
Both, okay.
Will they participate on 20, on a half of the?
Well, so they are participating. So we are splitting this cost, and so they're doing a portion, and we're doing a portion, and their portion's gone up too. I mean, this is just the cost that come in. They did multiple bids. This was the lowest bid. You know, quite honestly, I was a little worried that the bid would have gone up by now. We've been able to negotiate that the bid is in place through the end of this month, and that they'll honor that. Again, I'm here just to
provide
that information, let you determine.
Are they willing to go on with it?
Yes, they're willing to go on with it. They're waiting on us to determine whether or not we're willing to increase our contribution.
So what's the cost of the, what is the $100,000 that we're going to spend getting? I mean, are we rebuilding the roadway, sidewalk, curb, gutter?
Yeah, on
the other side of the business building across the traffic? Or is it on the business building?
It's on the business building side. We're not going to put one across the highway. We would not encourage that. So what this is, and part of this is it's a UDOT road, so we have to build it to UDOT specifications. We're having to modify a significant section so that we can get off the roadway, that it can be long enough that we can get two buses there in the event that both the Aggie Shuttle and us are there at the same time. So it's not a typical bus stop, and that's why the costs are so large.
Is UDOT participating?
UDOT is not participating. They did approve it, but they're not participating.
Todd, I had an opportunity to go to the affordable housing seminar, and in talking with that, they're saying there could be a stabilizing effect at the end of this year, but there's still so much that needs to be built out. It's going to last for 5 years. So in talking with my builder and stuff, he's seeing that, yeah, there might be over the next 6 months, there might be some flattening in the market, but everybody's thinking it's going to keep on going with the price increases as they are. This is not going to get any cheaper for us, I don't believe.
Yeah, I think that's really the big issue. The Federal Reserve is saying this is a short-term blip, if you will, but truly, inflation's always going to be there. They just want to keep it at 2% if they can, but the costs are still going to be going up. So if we can afford to do it, and everything's in place and they're just waiting for a yes, then it behooves us to say yes and get going.
Yes.
From a funding standpoint, you can afford to do the additional funding.
Do we need a motion?
Yeah, we would need more action on this.
Hey, before you make your motion, can I just say one or two things? I'm amazed at how fast we've spent $400,000 today.
Yeah.
I mean, this is six full-time bus drivers that we're spending right now. This is crazy. In the last 15 days since we've had this conversation, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, Fortune Magazine have all reported construction materials coming down in price. We're making all these decisions in a vacuum, assuming that this is going to go on forever. There's no reason why this would go on forever. From the time we bid it to today, it doubled in price. That's the market telling you people not to do this right now. It's the time to say, hey, slow down. We don't have to build everything right now. Certainly, we have the money. That doesn't mean we should go spend the money. I think we ought to be a little bit more cautious about how much money we're spending tonight.
So, Patrick, to counter that, we don't have bus drivers if we don't spend the money.
We just spent that money.
Right.
We did. That one's done. We're not going back on that one tonight.
I think that, too, we need to think long-term about the benefit to CBTV of having that stop. And is it a benefit to do it when the university is ready to do their share? Or is it a benefit for us to do it at some later point in time when we have to share, when we have to absorb more of it?
I think we ought to put it in perspective. There's no other entity in this town that we would spend $100,000 on to deliver their customers to them. There's not one. And I know they're special. I know we love them. Most of you are employed by them. And I know I'm in a thin ice here. But just be careful. We're spending a lot of money here.
That'll be a critical location, though, that will provide a lot more ridership if there's one right there, because a lot of people don't want to go down some of those longer routes. So I think it's a good move. And yes, I work at USU.
Jeff, you should recuse yourself from this conversation.
I'm not planning on this.
Doesn't COVID money have to be spent by a certain time?
Yeah, I don't think that factors into this. That's not.
We have a substantial amount of money that we can invest in our infrastructure and our future. And this is one of those things. And I was just using it as an example.
Sometimes it takes money to make money.
We don't want money.
Tell me what happens to service over the next 12 months if we choose not to do this. Are we going to stack people up more down at the intermodal hub than we are already?
No, again, granted, last year was COVID, right? So the loop started, it ran for a couple months, and then COVID hit, right? But we've operated service without this stop, and you could continue to operate service without this stop, and I don't think it's going to be an impact. If you build the stop, they will come. I guarantee you that the stop will be used, but you could wait a year, and I don't think there would be any grumblings. If you build it, you'll have a lot of happy customers.
I look at all of the people that are going to be moving in downtown, and if we have that loop that goes like that, we have immediately decreased traffic and increased ridership.
Yeah. This increases convenience. That's really what it does. It increases convenience.
By you bringing this to us, I'm assuming that you're advocating, as our professional manager that runs this service for us, you're advocating for this?
So what I'm saying is, I believe the stop is a needed stop. On the timing, I don't have a direction for you, because I'm like everyone else. I'm trying to guess and read tea leaves, so I don't know one way or the other. I do know that the stop will absolutely be used. I think it would benefit the system. I think to the things you've talked about, the ridership would grow. I do agree with Patrick that the costs are substantial, and so that's why I think I'm glad that you've had the discussion. And so that timing thing, I don't really
so
have an answer.
So, Todd, in that same vein, as you're working to balance all the objectives we have, you're looking to increase ridership by this, which I agree is a great thing. Nicole can't find drivers to service it. What's the point? If we put it off a year, at least maybe we'll make a more robust driving pool that can service it. Right now, we may not be able to service all these things.
We're hopeful that with your decision tonight, we're going to be able to get staff up to speed. That is our goal, and we're grateful for that decision.
All I know is I'm not going to make the motion.
And again, not making the motion.
So it's $50,000 is already in the budget for this.
Correct.
So it's an additional $50,000.
Correct.
That we're asking for.
Yeah.
Does anyone ask UDOT to participate?
We can. I will say that the contractor that was the lowest bid, he agreed to honor the thing through the end of the month. After that, I do think the price is no longer valid, and that's okay too, right? I mean, so if you want us to ask UDOT, I'm fine to go do that and see if UDOT's willing to participate.
How long do they anticipate it will take to get started on it and to complete
so,
it?
So if you said you wanted to move forward with the additional money, we would have it probably started construction on July 6th and anticipating being done middle of September is what they anticipate. So part of the school semester won't be in place. Good question.
I'm just thinking about my experience as a student, and I remember, you know, getting on and off the bus on 7th North and having to walk all the way through campus, and it's like a 3-block walk, right? And that's a long walk, and so I think it's not just any old small bus stop that, you know, there's a dozen of them along the way. Like, it's a pretty good stop. It will be used a lot, I think.
Yeah.
And it's very worthwhile.
And again, I'm not here to advocate the time. I really want you to determine that. I definitely think it's a worthwhile stop. It also will spread the ridership, right? So one of the great things when we add frequency, we see growth, but we also spread ridership, right? So you're not in a bus crammed, right? So it's the same type of thing. Not everyone's going to go to 7th North. Some people will go here. It spreads ridership out, which makes it a more comfortable trip for people on the bus. And given how we feel right now, still with viruses and things like that, it might make people more comfortable as well.
I also remember being on a bus several times when there's like 90 people on the bus, and
Aggie shuttle, you know, and you're all like squished like sardines, so.
I don't think anyone's against the stop.
Right.
It's a timing.
Sure. And I totally get that.
And so if you were spending your own money, would you go out and start building a house right now? Or would you wait?
So I was at the affordable housing summit with Gregory, and what they said was, if you're going to be in your home less than 5 years, don't go now, wait. If you're going to be in your home longer than 5 years, you're still going to come away with growth. But so I don't know what that answer is.
We're
that's why I say.
This bus stop, though, so.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where. That's why I don't have any more information than you on how to project this. I don't know how to project this. I'm just here to tell you, at some point, this stop makes a lot of sense. But whether that's this year, next year, or the year after, I
can we put a motion on the table and see where people feel about it?
Yeah.
I move that we approve the money.
I second that.
Now we can have more discussion if anybody wants to have discussion with us.
What would happen if we waited 3 months? I'm really interested to see what's going to happen now that the anti-eviction notice hasn't been, you know, redone by Congress. You know, we're in real estate, and we really do expect that there will be more homes on the market because, you know, banks do have the option now of eviction, which will put more homes on the market, which will slow down the big boom that is in building right now. I really would like to wait 3 months, but what would 3 months waiting do?
I think you could wait 3 months. I don't think there's a problem. I do think if you start bidding this, or start saying, hey, we're ready to go, and then you put it off again, and hey, we're ready to go, I think you will run the risk that contractors won't bid on it.
If you wait three months, you won't get it in this year.
Because
UDOT won't let you pave after October.
Yeah, so that is the thing.
The cost is
going to
go up.
You're going to have to wait until the spring comes.
You think it will?
Yeah, it's going to go up. 3 months won't make a difference. No. Call for the question.
Discussion?
Call the question.
We vote.
All right. So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Nay. I just want to make sure we know who the names and the eyes are. We may want to do roll call.
Okay.
Okay, those are.
I'm going to wait.
Okay, so you have those four.
You had Sean over there.
Oh, okay.
Don't forgive me.
Okay, so nays are Patrick, Mary, Sean, Terry, Mike, and Will. Right.
And me.
Cecilia.
I'm only married because I
ruled it for her. So, but
it's still carried. Okay.
So, should we please read those again?
Nays are Patrick, Mary, Sean, Terry, Mike, Craig, and Cecilia.
I'm not a nay.
Oh,
Mary. Terry. Oh,
Terry.
No, she read Mary as well.
She said
so
Mary.
I'm sorry, I saw Andrew. And I got it that way.
Yeah, it's
still
okay.
So you're okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Make sure. Because I am, I'm for it.
All right. I'd like to do a roll call vote, please, to make sure we got this right. We'll start over here with Sean.
Name.
Yes.
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 Nay.
Nay.
Yes.
Nay.
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 Yes.
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 Abraham?
Can I get someone to repeat the question for me just so I 100% of what I'm voting on?
Yeah, the motion was to approve the additional $50,000 to begin construction on the bus stop.
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes. All right. Thank you. It's a good discussion.
Yeah.
Glenn, would you run us through first quarter financials, please?
Well, we've been talking about finances. So as you can see, we are down on several of our costs, especially in the payroll area, and that's why we can approve $300,000 and not increase our budget. And so you see that. So that was our biggest discussion was about that in our committee meeting. And so that's our biggest issue. Everything else is running as you would expect. And so we're running the first quarter. You're not going to get a lot of information, but we're running as expected. And I'm sure you've read the notes where we are, the specific things that Curtis put on there. So I don't know if you have any questions for Curtis regarding any of these items. Like I can say, payroll is, the situation with our drivers is the biggest concern. We want to get that back up. So
Todd, do you know what the budgetary figure was per gallon of diesel fuel?
What was the?
If I remember right, we were at $2.50 per gallon is what we budgeted, if I remember right.
So that'll go up.
Yeah, that area has gone up there. But, you know, overall.
But it's cheaper than gasoline.
Yeah.
For the first time in a long time.
Yes, true.
But we also buy quite a bit ahead, right? Don't we? How much do we are able to store?
We have a 10,000 gallon tank, and we fill that approximately every 2 weeks.
Oh.
It's about 10 days.
But we don't pay the tax.
Don't pay fuel tax. So there's a few taxes, but not much.
Right.
So where are we right now? Do you know where we're paying right now?
Village process today was $2.45.
Okay.
Nice. Actually, I'm not sure we budgeted $2.50. I think that might be high on that. I'll have to double check. But,
I think you budgeted higher than we were all like, oh yeah, we haven't used that fuel money for a couple of years, and you went, but it's going to go back up.
Yeah. It always goes back.
So.
I know we were running a little bit low in the first quarter, but we're catching that back up. Mindy monitors that. We have a way to monitor that and see how we're doing every quarter to see what's going on with the price. And right now we're okay budgetarily, but we watch that every single bill, because that one can get out of hand pretty fast.
Yes. What's the fuel storage we're proposing at the new facility?
Jody,
did you miss a question?
The fuel storage at the new facility for diesel.
What the size?
Yeah.
So we went with 15,000 in the end?
Yeah, I think we projected up to a 15,000 gallon tank.
Any other comments or questions for Glenn or Curtis?
Do we need to accept this, or?
You don't need to formally accept it?
No, but it helps with the state auditor. The auditors look for the fact that it was presented, so that's the biggest thing they look for, because we're required by law to present each quarter financial. But acceptance is always nice. I'll appreciate that one back.
Anyone care to make a motion?
Well, James, I move that we approve the 2021 first quarter financials.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. Thank you. All right, Sean.
All right. Last page in your packet. So what we talked about last month with formalizing this CEO compensation package, we put into an appendix, which would go into the policy governance manual and replace what currently exists, and that is that last page. It's what we already talked about. So I move. Now I've got motion sickness. I'm probably going to mess this up, but I move that we accept this as the appendix.
I will second it.
Yeah.
Any discussion? Any other questions? I know we've gone the rounds on this for quite some time, so hopefully we've got it all covered. Great. Hearing none. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Appreciate the work. All right. Tom.
So just want to come back and update the board. Last month, you approved us to work with one of the vendors that does a third-party app for location of the buses. And we have entered into negotiations. We've actually finalized negotiations. We're just finalizing the contract with them. And they've agreed to all the deliverables that we talked about, like taking the banner off and putting the routes on there and making it more reliable. And then they've agreed to a monthly maintenance fee to make sure that it stays reliable through the time that through January, potentially February, but we anticipate January of next year, 2022. And we've done that under the allotment that you've that you authorized. Grand total will probably be about $6,000, including monthly maintenance fees. He's anticipating that he will have that done by the middle of August. We put a little incentive into this that hopefully he'll get done sooner. If he does, he'll get some additional incentive if he gets it done sooner.
We can hire him as a bus driver.
We're at his discretion.
Yeah.
One question that came up that I just thought I might address just for information is a question of, you know, advertising this app. And I just want to go back that when it comes to apps, right, you all use many different apps. And some apps you'll use for a while and then you'll maybe go away from them. That's a real user preference thing, right? And so we see that right now. So some people like Logan Transit, some people like the Transit app, some people use Google Maps. And so our purpose in being open source is very much that way, right? So even when January comes and we have our dedicated app that's gonna be branded CBTD that will be our app, we're still going to push all the information out open source so these other developers can develop. The other thing that that does is once we move to this new technology in January, it changes our feed, and then Google Maps and Apple Maps will become live. They'll become real time. The only reason they're not real time now is because we don't have the last little bit of format that they need to make that happen, right? So, quite frankly, a lot of people that I talk to, they use Google Maps, and so that's probably where we're going to see a lot of users. So our intent is not to promote this app. We will definitely, as people that use it, they'll experience, hey, this is different, this is new. And this, the word of mouth spreads that for those folks. That's just kind of how it works. You know, that's purposeful. We specifically put in this, we're not branding this app as our app, because we don't want to create confusion. We don't want to brand this as our app and then 6 months later, oh, by the way, we've completely changed apps. Now this is our app. We don't want to create that. So just so you're aware of that, that is one thing that we specifically wrote in the contract, that this won't be our app. It's just we're asking them to upgrade it, if you will. So, but again, we're excited about that, that hopefully that'll be at the latest mid-August and that'll be in place. So I just wanted to report back on that because talk to us about that. So that's really all I have to report.
Great.
Thank you. Patrick.
In years past, we've had a tradition of every Christmas time, you and your significant other, we get together, we have dinner, some entertainment. It's been a very generous affair in years past. Last year, obviously, we didn't do one for obvious reasons. And this year we're back on getting back to normal, and I want to propose something different that's not normal. I think everybody kind of struggled through last year, and we're all struggling through getting back to what we used to do. And among those, the staff and the bus drivers and the mechanics and all those people that have done a fantastic job for us keeping the bus system running while we went through a pandemic. So I am asking each of you to consider foregoing our little Christmas tradition and instead moving those funds and your time and that event to August 10th, where we would host, we as a board would host a barbecue for the employees and their families of CBTD. On August 10th, we'd like you to come, flip burgers with us, serve them up, shake hands, or fist bump, whatever we do now, and just say thanks to the good people that kept Cache Valley Transit District going for a year that was unprecedented.
Does anybody have any concerns about foregoing another Christmas event? Are we okay with that?
Can I just say, when Patrick posed this idea, man, I can't tell you how much this would mean to people. Like, it's a big deal, right? Sorry. But it's a big deal to say thank you. And you guys, they really looked at that leadership. So this is huge. I think this is huge.
Do you have the location?
Yeah, we just do it at our offices, at the facility that we maintain the buses. We've done this in years past. We moved some buses out of the canopy. It's going to be hot. We moved buses out of the canopy. We set up tables and chairs. We have the grill there. We actually move fridges and freezers out there. So we'll have cold water, all you can drink cold water, and we'll have ice cream. But it's really about you being there and you serving them. It's huge. They will really love that.
So August 10th, 11:30 to 2:30. I think that's kind of in keeping with what this board's about. So I hope you consider that joining us.
And we as the board members go?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I like that idea of getting to know them and seeing them face to face.
Yeah.
Thanks.
If you show up, we'll show you a cook.
Can we really put burgers or are you just being facetious?
No, we would love you to.
Oh, gosh.
I'll
in the details.
I would love the burgers.
Dave, only you can hand out the water, okay?
What about the sides? Would some of it be
11:30 to 2:30 on August the 10th. Did we say it's a Wednesday? Oh. This isn't on the agenda, so don't tell our attorney. But
it's information.
This is in your packet. You should have enough of these for each of the elected officials that you represent on this board. We would love for you to go visit with those people, deliver it, invite them to come to this rodeo, which is 8 days after the barbecue. And it's been well received. As we've gone around to the different organizations and talked about it, most people are pretty excited about it. In years past, we haven't had awesome attendance because it's just another thing during the day. So if you can make a little bit of effort to get that word out to the elected officials and just special accolades. Sean did a great job in front of Cache County last night. Thank you for doing that. So thanks for all of you that have participated in these open houses and one-on-one discussions with the elected officials. I think we've made a lot of progress in the last few months.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well, folks, I think that... Oh.
I called him space on the next agenda for my city, River Heights, talk to the mayor, and tell him he'd get to drive the bus. He used to be a bus driver here.
Yeah.
He didn't have all that cool. And I'll take his place.
I speak to give one to Jeannie Simmons. One of these, my elected official.
Well, folks, thank you very much. I think that's a wrap for this meeting. Have a wonderful night, all.
Thank you.